Midlife in our 40s and 50s can be a challenging time. So many things are changing: our bodies, our health, our relationships, our work, our responsibilities, our dreams. We try to balance everything, but sometimes it can be a struggle to keep our bodies calm in the face of adversity, our minds consistent against distractions, and our hearts dependable in defiance of enticement. But what if we gain greater self-knowledge to gain wisdom? Wisdom to acknowledge and handle our ignorance, uncertainties, and limitations. Wisdom to know that whilst we can certainly achieve external success using our strengths, we can also gain character acknowledging our weaknesses. And the wisdom to know that whilst a lot is up to us, other factors such as luck, societal expectations, and perhaps fate itself conspire to test our journey through midlife. A journey from which we might not only ask, what do I want from life, but what does life want from me? Drawing on a myriad of research from scientific studies, philosophy, life coaching techniques, and anecdotal tales, the Midlife Maps podcast provides a reliable source of introductory information for this much understudied and often forgotten period of our lives. So join the Midlife Maps podcast as we find a map to navigate that. In any moment of decision, the best thing you can do is the right thing. The next best thing is the wrong thing. And the worst thing you can do is nothing. So said Theodore Roosevelt. Hey there, my name's Samantha Sashin, and welcome to Midlife Maps, the show for navigating our 40s and 50s. Today on our show, I'm joined by Melinda Rashford, my super-duper co-host.
Hiya.
And we're talking about making better midlife decisions. Ah, the jungle of decision-making. One we step into, then out of, then back into. And of course, the more time we take to decide, the more anxious we become until eventually we freeze, a sense of overwhelm shutting down our ability to move forward. It's ironic that although the quality of our lives is predominantly composed of us making decisions relating to our work and relationships, we give little thought as to how we arrived at these decisions. In fact, our decision-making processes often lack rituals or procedures. This can be particularly dangerous if we're making decisions within a group, as ethical considerations may be ignored in pursuit of a quick, unanimous decision. So how do we consistently make good decisions within this tangled, confusing jungle? Well, stay with us because we're going to find a map to navigate that.
We acknowledge the Wurundjeri people as the traditional owners of the land of which this podcast is recorded. We pay our respects to their elders past, present, and acknowledge their spiritual connection to country.
Thank you, Mal. Okay, so why can this jungle of decision-making be tricky? Whew. What are we wearing in this jungle, Mal? Let's ascertain the facts first. Oh, sorry. You didn't see that coming, did you?
Well, a little bit of warmth.
We need warmth
for protection.
So right.
You see where I'm going there.
It's absolutely.
Protecting ourselves with the decisions that we need to make.
Whoa.
Could be a doona because we're hiding ourselves away from the decisions we're making.
Yes. Good point. Yeah, that doona. Okay. All right. Well, this jungle of decision making can be tricky, apart from the fact we're trying to carry a doona around with us, because we have external factors that affect our decision making. Sometimes we don't have all the relevant information that we need to make a decision, or perhaps we have urgent deadlines to meet, or perhaps limited physical or emotional resources to make good decisions. They can really be a factor, can't they? Especially if we have a deadline to meet. Or relevant information, gosh, that's a minefield, isn't it? Which information is relevant?
Yeah, and if it's time sensitive, and we've done them just before, if the decision is an out of the box, or, you know, you can use past patterns to make those decisions, but if you haven't got all that information, you haven't done this one before,
yeah,
just that pause on it.
Yeah, that's a good point, because relevant information can be from other sources, yeah, but also from our own. Remember on another episode we were talking about my evidence boxes?
Oh, yeah.
You remember that? About having evidence about how we've done something before and the strategies we've had in place, yeah, to make a decision or to get to somewhere.
we may not have access to that for some reason, or just not really
drawing from it.
Yeah. Yeah. So relevant information can be from other people and ourselves as well. There was a gentleman, Barry Schwartz, who coined the phrase the paradox of choice. So he was saying that when we're buying things, for instance, trying to make a decision about what to buy, consumers waste time and mental energy second-guessing their choices.
I think that could be on the increase because we can't go somewhere without the reviews.
That's a great point, isn't it?
Mm.
Have you started doing that, like looking at people's reviews before you make a decision?
Someone suggested that I do it as far as jobs, you know, work environment and things like that, look up a workplace. And then someone else has said, yeah, but that's really individualised. That's not necessarily, you know, true. It could be true for them. That could be impacted. They could have addressed whatever it is. So that's not, I think research is good, but I think it doesn't lead me. It's not my leader in my decision making.
What is your leader, do you think?
Well, like you say, for example, if you're going to go to a restaurant, I'm not going to sit and look at the reviews. I don't sit and look at the menus or anything like that. I generally just go, I look and see, you know, probably reputation, other people's opinions, you know, if I've heard good reviews from personal people, not necessarily online Google reviews.
Okay.
If someone said, you know, it's a good venue, you should try this. I went here one time, I had amazing food. Give it a go. Location.
Because word of mouth is kind of a review, isn't it?
It is.
Mm. But not online, so you don't specifically go online and look at the stars, for instance, star reviews. Okay. I know my sons do that all the time, different generation obviously, and they definitely look at reviews, check it all out first before they go, which is interesting. I wonder if this paradox of choice, I was saying it backwards there for a minute, paradox of choice, I wonder if it's about second-guessing our choices. I wonder, it would be interesting to know if they are then trying to lessen, the risk, the degree to which they might second-guess their choice in the future by looking at the reviews. So. Well, that's interesting.
Well, I just heard a story again from the younger generation of family members. They were literally on the street paving the pound, pounding the pavement.
I don't know what we're doing today. We're making up all our little phrases.
But they're walking along, and I've done it ourselves, walking along trying to find a restaurant to go to, as opposed to just looking in the window and making that call. Hang on, let's just call it. We'll go here.
Yeah.
And the other partners looking up reviews. And in the end, they did that for so long, it was getting late and they nearly missed out or they didn't even eat in the end.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I know me and my husband, we'd done that many years ago and we still do it. We're not looking up the Google reviews, but that making a decision.
Yeah.
I don't care, just here.
Yeah.
So I think that's led me to this whole I don't care where we go so much anymore.
Oh.
Maybe that's why I'm.
And maybe it's a midlife thing that we have so many micro decisions we're making constantly that choosing a restaurant is probably at the least, you know, at the other
end.
And we just go, oh, let's just try this one.
Yep.
There are people in it, so it must be.
I'm not cooking.
Absolutely. That's why I'll go to any restaurant if I don't have to cook. Yeah. No, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. Which is loaded then into, or loaded. Linked, I don't know what's happening today, linked into the next factor, which is an overload of information where we struggle to decide which information to pay attention to. So obviously with the internet, we have the information at our fingertips, but which information do we pay attention to? It's like a triage of information, isn't it? We have to decide, that's a decision in itself, which information to pay attention to in order to make the decision
that we originally. Is it a credible source?
Yeah.
You can talk about politics in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wealth of information out there, media, everything.
Absolutely.
What part's the true?
Yeah. It's all about. So externally, my gosh, we've got a lot coming at us from do we have relevant information to do we have urgent deadlines to meet? Do we have limited physical, emotional resources to make good decisions? We may second guess our choice, and we may struggle to decide which information to pay attention to. So that's just the external factors, Mel, affecting our decision making. Then on top of that, we have internal factors affecting our decision making. For instance, we may suffer from perfectionism.
Yes, that's good stuff.
Yeah.
Decision making.
Absolutely, because we feel, well, we believe that everything, every decision we make has to be perfect. And if it's not, there's going to be all sorts of ramifications. And so we take longer to make a decision.
And the more you put it off making that decision, the greater the decision becomes.
Yeah.
The impact of that decision becomes a much greater,
well,
doesn't it?
Well, it could be either in reality that happens or it's just perceived.
But exactly. Greater in your mind.
Yeah.
Anxiety around having to make that decision or make a call.
I agree. I always think the analogy I use with my clients in that regard is, you know, in the old westerns, the tumbleweed that would go down the main street in the half-deserted town, and it just gets bigger and bigger. It just grows because there's just no force stopping it to act as a circuit breaker. And I always think it's like that. The longer you spend in your head trying to make a decision, it's like a tumbleweed that just grows and grows. And as you say, our perception then becomes that the outcome is way bigger than it actually is.
It could have been.
So it's
right from the start.
Yeah. Yeah. It skews our perception of it, doesn't it? A fear of failure is another reason why this trekking through this jungle of decision making can be tricky. It's linked to perfectionism to a degree. But it can just be a fear of failure, which is one of our three universal fears, or a feeling of overwhelm where we just have so many decisions to make. I mean, I think everybody in modern life, and particularly in midlife when we have so many things going on, that we just have a feeling of overwhelm of making decisions. I know, I don't know if you have this, Mel, sometimes I'll just say to my husband, he'll say, do you want to do this? Do you want to say, can you just make the decisions today? Mm-hmm. I just really, my brain needs a rest from just all these micro decisions that we make, from what to have to dinner to does that new sleeper wall look straight?
Calendar.
Yes, absolutely.
Getting every family in and making sure, you know, you're seeing everybody. Multiple.
Yes.
Workloads.
It can become quite overwhelming. And when we become overwhelmed or feel overwhelmed, we just freeze. It's just the body's natural defense mechanism. So imagine we're in this jungle and we're just overwhelmed by all this foliage around us. We're there with our doona. It's really heavy, this doona.
But it's protective.
It's protective. I don't know. It's weighing me down.
Well,
maybe I think
it's not a doona. Let's just say a really thick jumper and trackies. Sorry, Tim. Trackies.
What?
So they're really thick. It's just padding everywhere. We've got our padding on.
Sorry, I think I'm just hyperventilating.
We've got our Uggies.
Uggies as well. All right, so.
Because we're protecting ourselves from the external, don't want to make the decision.
Yes.
That's our hibernation.
Absolutely. And I do agree with that.
Yeah.
Do agree. Okay, I've got chinos on, you've got tracksuit pants on. And the foliage is so thick though, isn't it,
yes,
when we feel overwhelmed and we just can't see a way out. It's almost claustrophobic, almost coming in on top of us. So, yeah, this jungle of decision-making can be really tricky. And similarly, what we're talking about before, but this is, we're talking about internal factors, we face what's called decision paralysis, where we freeze when we're just faced with so many options. It's just the brain can't. When I was in the supermarket the other day, for instance, I was saying to one of the staff there, I said, why are there so many brands of period pads?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and so many different types. I mean, I would have thought a period pad was just a pad. I'm just using this example. It can be lots of other things. We just have so many choices that when you're standing there and you just want even a Band-Aid, have you seen how many types of Band-Aids there are? It's just you stand there, or say your Panadols or paracetamol, you know, where there's one for this pain and that pain, and you're just standing there, and if you're tired or your time poor, sometimes you just stand there and say, oh, I just want this product.
Can I add to this?
Oh, please do, Mel.
I've got a bone in this area.
Oh, go.
There was a store that opened up many years ago called, am I allowed to say? Subway.
Yeah.
It's just heavy when you go in there.
Mm.
Okay, what kind of roll would you like? Okay, what kind of spread would you like? What kind of meat? Would you like this? Would you like that? What kind of cheese is it? I don't know if I've done cheese because there's just so many frigging questions. And it's just like, I just want to sell it. I don't like to go to Subway anymore. I really had to boycott it.
Because, really? Oh, too many questions.
Just, you know what? Make me a sandwich. I don't care. Put it on.
Yeah.
Have it pre-made for me. That would be lovely, wouldn't it?
Even better.
Yeah. And I'll pick it off the shelf.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I don't need all those questions.
But no.
Fired at me.
Yeah, that's fair enough because – that's just adding on to all the other decisions we've had to make, a lot of them pretty major and important. And then when you go in somewhere and you have to make a lot of micro decisions, whether it's at the shop there or at home or at work, and sometimes you just go, oh, I don't know, you make a decision or does it really matter? Or
I'm sure there's an element of psychology behind it.
Yes.
So people obviously feel like, you know, everything's ready, prepared individually prepared for you. You're in the control. Look what we're doing for you. But when you're in that mood, whoa.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I remember we went to this lovely restaurant. I think it was a French restaurant many months ago. And it was all a bit overwhelming, the menu, and a lot of the ingredients I didn't understand. I just said to the waiter, I said, you choose for me. Mm. I think I was in a mood as well. I was just tired and just, I said to the waiter, I can't remember his name. Yeah. I said, Pasquale, please, you choose for me and choose the wine for me as well.
Yep.
Just choose everything for me. He said, okay.
And he did.
probably trotted to the kitchen going, oh, this is the easiest client we've had. So, and it was lovely. And yeah, I just couldn't make a decision or didn't want to make a decision. So you just handball it to someone else. So sometimes, yeah, we do that.
These
don't
are the things that, you know, keep us up at night.
Yeah, I know.
These are the smaller decisions we're talking about, I suspect.
I know.
But then the larger ones as well can also are obviously,
absolutely.
These are the smaller ones that get on our nerves, probably because we're trying to make those other bigger decisions in the background.
Definitely. Definitely.
And that's why the overwhelm.
Absolutely. The last internal barrier I get, it's not a barrier. Well, it can be an internal barrier that we can have. And this is interesting. This is called willful ignorance. Apparently studies have shown that 40% of us will happily make decisions without wanting to know the consequences of them. Oh, that's interesting. That's a whole nother, whole area of study, I guess, that 40% of us. So for whatever reason, we're too tired to care or we just don't care. Mm. I know somebody that I know just said, look, if it doesn't affect me, I don't care. That's just the way they live their life. Yeah. So, yeah, willful ignorance, which is interesting, isn't
it? Yes.
Which
and
if 40
terminology too.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, terminology. It's interesting though, if 40% of us will happily make decisions without wanting to know the consequences of them means that 60% actually do care, which I find positive.
Yes.
Well, I think I do.
I've probably got a few more words to say about that. It leads into, that means 40% of people, whether they're making the decisions for themselves, they don't care. But say it's a joint decision, 40% are not contributing and those 60% are taking that load.
Oh, Mel, look at you. That's a very good point. I know you're moving your fingers around. If only people could see this. You're all lit up like a Christmas tree. Wow, that's a great point. Is that a lot of extra load on that 60% then?
That's why they're in there too.
Yeah, that's all. Look, you're really trying to sell me this doona thing and I think I'm coming around to it. Yeah, no, that's a great point. Is that just adding an extra layer of stress and pressure on the 60% there are trying to think of the consequences of their decision making. Yeah, great point. Yeah. So really, between the external factors and internal factors, essentially when we're trying to make decisions in this decision making jungle, it's usually essentially a battle between what we want to do and what we think we should do.
Yes, good. Yes, I agree with that.
It's essentially when we have this trouble making decisions, that's really what it comes down to, isn't it? This, yeah, I want to buy that dress, but should I? Mm. Should I?
That's right. Jobs, what your decisions are in the job. You know, I should be doing this for the employer.
Yeah, but I really want to do this, but it's not in alignment. Yeah. Oh, I could give a lot of examples there. So that's the overall kind of barriers that we're having when this decision maker. Oh, it's a bit tricky, this jungle, isn't it? Hey, it's a bit tricky. Let's be honest, this jungle. Probably one of the trickiest or trickier jungles we've encountered, as shown by the fact that we now have a doona in our jungle, which I've never had before. But
it's again, being at a tropical jungle too, you know, that means that we're really white.
Sweating.
It's very hot, doona. Unless you get that summer one.
Summer doona. We didn't really think this through, did we, beforehand? My goodness. I think we need more coffee. All right, so this jungle with our doona and thick foliage, what can we gain now, I hear you ask, as we try and struggle through it? Well, one of the things we can do, well, we can gain, is that it's called prospective rationalization, where we rationalize our decisions before we make them.
Yes.
And there's retrospective rationalization, which is rationalizing our decisions after we've made them. Now, both are normal with making individual decisions, okay? So that's the normal process. I'm just giving some background here. That's what we normally do as individuals. But the problems arise when we try and make decisions in groups. So let's say you're part of a council or a committee or even just a family, trying to make a decision. The trouble is that individuals will forego these processes of prospective rationalization and retrospective rationalization. I knew this was going to be an issue. I just knew it. Retrospective rationalization. Individuals may forego these to make good and ethical decisions just so that they conform to the group, or they avoid dissent, or they just want to make a quick unanimous, in quotation marks, decision. That's where
they've all got a different approach.
Yeah.
And they've all got these external and internal dialogues happening.
Yeah.
So to get to that answer or that decision, yeah, you get better perspectives, different perspectives to appreciate and see it from obviously different angles to go, oh, I hadn't considered that. Yep, let's tweak it here, and you're trying to make that best possible, but it just is complex.
Well, it's definitely complex, yeah, when you have, well, look at the United Nations coming to a decision with all those countries involved. I mean, it's not easy. And because one of our universal fears is a fear of belonging, so there are three universal fears: fear of not being loved, fear of not being good enough, and fear of not belonging. So if you're in a group, and you can see this even in juries sometimes, yeah. You know, there's been shows on it. Sometimes, yeah, it's just about fitting in with the group, or they don't want dissent, or they just want a unanimous decision. Everyone's tired. Let's just reach a decision. Yeah, but ethical considerations and decisions may be foregone because people are just bypassing, if you like, this prospective rationalization and retrospective rationalization. Mm. So that can cause problems in groups. They call it groupthink. Yeah, it can be a real issue, especially what if you're on a committee that's running a multi-million dollar business,
yeah,
or in government, for instance, you know, where people's lives are
fractures affected. And particularly when a group, like you say, in juries, for example, come together, there's the beginning when a group comes together that establishing relationships, and then you can go through the harmony stages and then fractures. All those aspects come through, and to get to the other end.
Absolutely. It's quite a process. And then everybody within that group plays a different role.
Correct.
Which is needed. Yeah, devil's advocate. Educator. Yeah, lots of different things. So that's a whole, you know, another level, isn't it, put on us to make decisions, yes, which can make complicated. So really to make decisions then, we need to use both our head and our heart, mm-hmm, so our cognitive reasoning, but also our instinct to make decisions, as researchers argue that each method has its own advantages and we need to refer to both to make good decisions. Mm-hmm. You know how sometimes people divide themselves into, I'm a logical, yeah, oh, I'm a logical head thinker kind of, you know, thing.
Or emotional,
yes,
run with emotion.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And that's fine, but really in the end we should be referring to both within ourselves. And well, because it makes sense. Extremes of anything is not good, is it? If you're on the spectrum, extremes of anything is not productive and helpful. So somewhere, a happy balance in the middle.
I was just going to say that word.
Yeah.
The word of always balance.
It always comes
back to balance.
Yeah, it always comes back to balance, doesn't it? Everything. Really?
Very.
We should do a whole podcast episode on balance. Oh, my gosh. Okay. All right. I'll pencil it in. Now, also what we can gain through trekking through this jungle, so using it both our head and our heart and making sure we stick to using the processes of prospective rationalization and retrospective rationalization. Don't stop your applauding, Mels. Thank you. If we follow the rituals and considerations, we give ourselves a map to reliably navigate this jungle to always make good decisions. So rituals and considerations that we've already set up beforehand, you know, like in our evidence box,
yeah,
of what we always talk about. So this takes the stress out of making a decision. So I'll give you an example, for instance. Yeah. When I was on my own for about 18 months after my divorce, I went, on dates, and I can't claim this as my own. I had read it in a book that what you focus on is what you see and whatnot. So I should write a list of what I was looking for in a partner, from everything from, you know, the most major stuff right through to minor stuff, I guess. And I should carry that list around with me, keep it handy. So I did that. I kept it in my handbag. So that then when I went on dates, I could really kind of pick up, no, yep. Rather than leaving it purely to luck or hope. And the rule was, apparently according to this book, was that the person had to meet at least 70% of the criteria on this list to ensure some degree of compatibility. So it was really good because I was just focused going on dates. It was like, okay, yep, no, ooh, he doesn't meet that. Ooh, no. Anyway, then when I met my future husband, he actually met 100% of the things on the list, which is freaky, isn't it? 100%. But it just took the process of decision making. I it's almost like automating it.
Yeah.
You know, I had the criteria there. I already knew what I wanted. I already had. So that's the, prospective rationalization. I'd already made
lines work.
Yeah.
And you weren't, and by having them in your head previously, you weren't therefore just going on those dates and going, oh, I can move that line.
Yeah.
It's like a control board that you've got in front of you, Sam.
Yes.
Moving your line up and your little controls up and down. Oh, will this work?
Yes.
Oh, that will work.
Yes, that's what it's like. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So it really worked because it was just a way to focus my mind, but also just take that stress. It's like I had enough decisions to make without having those decisions as well hanging over my head. So by having them, number one, already pre-thought out, then having them written down so I could refer to them, it just made it all, I'm telling you, it made it so much easier. Mm. It was that prospective rationalization, and then, of course, I could do the retrospective rationalization after the fact that I, you know, met him, and then I could look at my list and go, oh, look, he does meet the 100, we'll give this a go. It's got a good chance of success. I mean, the first year was rough because we're Polish and we had language issues and cultural differences, but that aside, it really gave a good foundation. Wow, I'm really.
It's not often it comes your way.
What was in that hot chocolate? I'm going to have to handball it in a minute, Mel. I don't know what was in that hot chocolate. Okay, and another thing I love these. These are called Cartesian questions that I would always ask clients to answer. And it was to get a look from all perspectives on making decisions. So wrap your head around this, Mel. So first I would ask, the client's there and they're trying to make a decision about something, okay? So I ask them, so what would happen if you did that thing?
Yep.
Okay, let's give an example. What would it be? Take that job.
Right.
Okay, let's use that as an example. Okay. Yep. So what would happen if you took that job? So you think, oh, okay, bummer. Second question, what would happen if you didn't take that job? Okay, so you start thinking of that. Third question, what wouldn't happen if you did take that job? Yeah, by this point, the client's looking at me, the eyes are going, oh.
Did we cover that before?
No. See, what would happen if I took the job?
Yeah.
Is the first question. Yeah. All right.
What would happen if you don't take
the job? Yes, that's the second question. What would happen if you don't take the job?
Yeah.
Third question, what wouldn't happen if you did take the job?
Yeah.
Okay. And fourth question, what wouldn't happen if you didn't take the job? Yeah, what do you think about that then, Mel? Pretty cool, huh? That makes your head spin, doesn't it?
It does. I'm just writing this one down.
You're writing it down. But yes, that's a classic way of asking people or giving people almost a holistic view of all the possible outcomes and scenarios from making one decision. So,
and
yeah.
They can almost visualize it and describe
absolutely.
It to you.
Absolutely.
Just visualizing
yep.
it.
And it just gets your brain, it just kind of gets your brain woken up kind of thing to all the different possibilities instead of you just maybe just getting on the one track of thinking about all the things that will happen if you get the job and then being completely disappointed if you don't get the job. With these questions, you're looking at all the scenarios, then you can have a game plan for dealing with all four scenarios.
Yeah.
And so whichever scenario happens, oh, okay. I've got a game plan, which I might say is a very stoic way. Stoic philosophy is very in that space where you think about all the outcomes. You don't assume one has a greater chance of occurring than another, and you're prepared for all of them.
Yeah, that's right. And the next day after those decisions are made, you're still getting out of bed. Nothing's
yes.
The world hasn't stopped.
No, hasn't stopped. Yeah. Still rotating. So, yeah, so that's a lot of things we can gain. So we need to find – now we have our doona. We have established that. You're in tracksuit pants. I'm in chinos. And we're trying to get through this very thick foliage of the jungle of decision-making. Now, which other tools do we need with us, I hear you say, Mal? Well, I didn't really hear you say that. I think that was just wind.
What other tools do we need?
Oh, Mal, how did you know to – how did you know to ask me that, Mel? Well, I'm so glad you did because there are actually, I'm going to give you some tools in a minute. I've got a few of them. There's 16. I know, I love tools. But there are 7 different perspectives that we should take in first that I'm going to give you overall, okay? Now, these come from anybody out there. Check out the School of Life. I've been a member for many, many years. It's a philosophical-based school, if you like. And they've got wonderful, wonderful resources on there from a philosophical point of view of covering everything that we encounter in life. So they, School of Life, says that since there's often a sense of panic or fear or even low self-confidence when we make decisions, a reliable way to make good decisions is to first look at the situation from 7 different perspectives. So I'm just going to go through them. Number one, these are so interesting. You wouldn't think of that. Number one, what would your enemy do? What decision would your enemy make? Now, assuming you
haven't
got it. No, you don't, Mel. You don't have any enemies, which is not, you're not really a good example for this one, are you? Well, let's pretend that you did for a minute.
Okay.
Well, the premise is gritting your teeth at me. I don't know what that means. No. Well, okay. So much of the enemy. The idea is that the enemy, they know our weaknesses. right? Yep, so yep. What would they – so what if we did the opposite of what wish or they'd advise us to do? I know it sounds a bit complicated. I get it. So the enemy would assume that we would act a certain way. So what if we just did the opposite?
Right.
So that's just one way of looking at it. Another way, a second perspective is your gut. What does your gut say? Because this is that's essentially a –
Yep.
Yeah, essentially a culmination of all the previous decisions we've ever made, right or wrong. So, but it's got a wealth of information. So what does your gut say? That's a perspective to think about. A third one is death. If only death can force us to live authentic and meaningful lives. So if that's imminent, you know, what are we going to do? What are we going to do in that short period of time? Fourth is caution. Now, this is interesting because I've actually got a book at home written by someone in the Silicon Valley called Move Fast and Break Things, because that is the Silicon Valley
approach.
approach.
Ethos.
But how, ethos. But how about we don't move fast and break things? Because sometimes it's better to compromise than go full steam ahead with a decision that may cause untold damage to ourselves and others.
Mm-hmm.
So how about we use a little bit of caution and think about the outcomes? Which was the related back to the perspective rationalization, wasn't it? Where we think about our decisions before we make them. A fifth perspective is courage. Whilst following rules is important for the cohesion of society, sometimes we need to break out and do something that's weird or something that's different, something that's unconventional, or maybe something that's unexpected.
A 35K walk.
Oh, yes, Mel. You're going to do a 35K walk, yes.
In the one day.
In the one day.
Oh, no. So there you go. I've got courage.
Pretty sure I'm your support crew for that rather than walking. But, yeah, no, something, yeah, exactly, courage, yep. A sixth perspective is what would your parents say? What kind of advice that, you know, they may give us? Because right or wrong, whether you take it or not, they're still a big influence on us. So that's a perspective that we can take. And seventh perspective is from God or another deity. What would they want us to do in a particular situation? So before we even start moving in the decision-making jungle, these are seven perspectives that we can just flow around in our head and think about before we actually get moving.
Can I just say another thing too?
No, Mel.
You've got seven. I'm just going to add an eight.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Would you believe it?
Yeah, go.
I'm going to add an eight is that what's come up for me, like in different decision-making approaches that I've had, okay, what would I want my child if they were in the same situation?
Mm.
What would I advise them to do?
Nice.
Because it's easy to want the best for them or put them onto the right track or, you know, a guide, but you don't necessarily follow the same ethos for yourself.
Absolutely. That's a common coaching question where what would you advise a friend to do in the same situation?
Yeah.
That's a great point because often when we're in it, it's, as you say, number one, it's hard to get perspective on something, but also sometimes we just don't follow our own advice. So we're quick to advise others but not necessarily take our own advice. So, yeah, what would we advise our child or a friend in exactly the same situation to do given the information we have?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, we'll take an eight on there. Thanks, Mal. So with those eight perspectives and then now we've got our tools. We got our tools now to go through this jungle. So we've thought about it from those perspectives. Now we can start moving with these tools. So number one is obviously gather all the current information that's on this topic of the decision we're trying to make. If it's a new job, buying something or moving to a new city or having a child, I mean, it could be anything, couldn't it? We gather information on the topic. It's probably a no-brainer, really. A second tool is just taking what's called a satisficing approach.
So not said
well. Hopefully, I've pronounced it correctly. So not satisfying approach, but satisficing approach, which is basically, you know what, a good enough outcome is fine rather than perfection.
Yes,
not everything is perfection. If you pass the test, you pass, or it could be anything, couldn't it?
That's right. Not making the decision that's not satisfying. That's not going to get you the result. which not making a decision is a decision in itself.
Yeah.
But, yeah, of course, yeah. Any decision is good enough.
Sometimes a good enough outcome is fine. Doesn't have to be perfection. Not all the time. Three, the third tool is timing, knowing when to take immediate action or wait for further information. Sometimes you've got to make a snap decision. Maybe it's life and death. Maybe it's just super important. Maybe it's going to be a missed opportunity that if you don't make a decision now, the opportunity is going to pass you by. Or sometimes you wait for further information. It's not the right time to make the decision now, you know. So that's something that I think gets better with practice, doesn't it? The fourth tool is equally appealing options. So if there are more than two options, we should know our priorities beforehand, gather information, consider alternatives, consider benefits and costs, keep in check the influence of outsiders, learn from our own and others' mistakes, sleep on heavier decisions overnight, and then once decided, we own the decision.
Mm.
Ah, sounds pretty easy, hey, Mel?
It does sound. And they do say there is science around sleeping on things because it does take the emotion out. Our brains process the emotions overnight, so then that's why with that time and sleep, the next day we can clearly make it.
Yeah, because you've seen it from a different perspective.
Mm.
And, yeah, having that time and distance. I mean, it's even the same, and this is a very simple example, but they say never write and edit in the same. It's not the same process. Don't do it in the same sitting. So if you write something, always wait 24 hours, go back and edit it, and you will see things that you didn't see 24 hours before. It's just the way the brain works. You just, things pop out at you and whatnot. So, yeah, that's a good one. The fifth tool, emotions. Tune into them and control unhelpful ones. That can help with decision-making, that tool, isn't it? Control your emotions and just park your fear aside for the moment or your anxiety about it and just look at it in a logical, cold, hard, cold light of day kind of scenario. That's another tool. And another tool, sixth tool, is to tell yourself it's not a final decision. Unless we're a world leader where there are millions of people, you know, affected by a decision, it's not a final decision. It can be changed.
We can change our mind.
We can change our mind. It's not a final decision.
Yep.
The world doesn't rotate on it.
Mm.
If we buy the wrong house or we, you know, take a job offer that 3 days later we think, oh, maybe we shouldn't have. I don't know. Or we build the sleeper wall.
Or accept that you – is this further down?
Mm.
Or accept that you made the decision with the information you had at the time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's, yes.
You know, be kind to yourself.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. Mm. Yes. Seventh tool, visualization, the outcome of each decision option. So visualize the outcome of each decision option. Do you know, I see that a lot with, I'm getting into rugby league now. And I know. And whenever, is rugby league to you what tracksuit pants are to me? Anyway, I'm enjoying it. And I've noticed that. It's obviously the way they're trained. So when you won't know this, but there's a guy that takes a field kick after there's a try, well, a try look interested. Anyway, when he's got the ball, when he's getting ready to kick and he has the ball on that little
stand.
Oh, Mel, I don't know what it's called, the stand. He visualizes, you can see their eyes moving from the goal back to the ball and they're, you know, following the trajectory that the ball will go. They've obviously been trained that way because they all do it. I think, wow, that's incredible. And 9 times out of 10, they get the ball through. And, yeah, so visualizing the outcome of each decision option as we did with the Cartesian question, so looking at it from all four options and visualizing the outcome of each of those decisions will set you up that you won't be shocked and surprised or caught off guard when one of those outcomes occurs.
That's right. You've already planned ahead.
Yeah.
Planning.
Now, an eighth tool, regret. Would one decision mean we miss out on something we value? That's something to think about, isn't it, when we're trying to make a decision. If I buy that dress, Does it mean that I miss out on saving that $100? Is that something of value to me, as in one of my values? Is saving important at the moment? Or is buying the dress of value to me at the moment? You know, these are the things that it's another tool that we can think about. Regret, will I regret buying that dress?
And that comes into justifying and doing that whole process again, doesn't it?
Yeah, the whole perspective rationalization. Decide in advance is the ninth tool. This lowers impulsive decision making. I know I do. If I go to a shopping centre, man, I'm in and out. I know what I'm there to get. I have to literally put my hand up going past a bookshop. No, don't go in there, don't go in there. But yeah, I'm on a mission. Same in the supermarket. I've got a list and I only get what's on the list.
Yeah.
That's it. And then I put in brackets, this is probably just, I'm just telling you this, but I put in, so I have a budget, and then if it doesn't meet in the budget, I put the item in brackets and it goes on to next week's list. But I know why I'm there is the point. I go in there.
That's very disciplined.
Well, it's just, yeah, deciding in advance, and it lowers impulsive decision making, because don't worry, I can spend with the best of them. And it's just knowing my, being aware of a weakness, I guess, that I can be impulsive like everyone. So this is a way, this is a strategy I use.
Yeah, and don't forget, like you said earlier, you do have rules. You have so many rules, and you live to them, and you keep yourself constrained within them.
Yeah, because then that upholds my values. So now, within reason, this is number 10, compare alternatives. Within reasons, as I said before, it's like the period pads, like 20 different ones you can get, and it's like, oh, then it becomes overwhelming, then you don't know what you're doing, then you start undermining your own decision making and
pricing. Hang on, let's compare 100 grams.
Oh. 100 grams to 200. It's like, oh gosh. So yeah, that compare alternatives within reason. Absolutely. Number 11 tool: cost versus benefits. Research suggests we find it hard to simultaneously consider both. That makes sense, doesn't it? Because the costs versus the benefits, they're almost at two opposite ends.
About the dress. Let's use that example.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's the monetary cost, but the amount of wear, the feeling it brings. So they're those benefits. Are you rationalizing it? You're comparing that at the time, and some will be greater. You'll weigh heavier more on one side than the other at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're thinking about the costs of it. Like literally the cost of it.
Yeah, literally.
But also, is it taking away from another area where I could put that money and the benefits? Am I going to get much wear out of it? Is it going to last long?
But then it's saying it's hard to simultaneously
absolutely
consider both at the same time.
Mm-hmm. So don't be too hard on ourselves when we go, oh, I'm just going to buy the dress. Because it's hard to.
Let's go shopping.
Well, yeah, if you're standing right there, and I don't know about everyone else, but the music's going, there's lots of stimulation going on. And I have, God bless him, a husband that if I show any interest in a dress, oh, let's get it. Yeah, just get it. And I'm going, oh, just give me a minute. Wait, I've got to rationalize this. I've got to weigh up the cost versus benefits. And so I find that all a bit overwhelming, and so usually I'll just go, no, don't worry, let's just move on. It's all too much. And forget that you then got to try it on, so that's it's another, whole process in itself.
That's a cold cost.
Oh, my gosh. So, yeah, so number 12, reframe the decision. This is a 12th tool, reframe the decision. So the background to any decision we make, we greatly impact how we view it. So we should reframe the problem in a way that makes sense to us individually. So that's a personal thing, reframing. You know, for me, it's like, well, is the world going to end if I don't buy the dress or buy the dress? You know, that kind of stuff, whatever works for us. Concrete plans. We're better at following concrete plans. So this is another tool. So making what you said before, like having rules around things and concrete. So, saying that we're going to read this book by next Tuesday rather than abstract plans, such as I should read more. So that can help us make decisions where we just, it's just saying we just be a bit more specific. Say I'll read a book by next Tuesday rather than I'll just generally read more books. So just being a bit more specific. And the last couple are rest. We should always make decisions when we're rested, like what you said, sleeping on it the night before. Don't make it when you're tired and hungry. Don't shop when you're hungry, for instance. And accountability. Imagine if someone's going to be checking our decision. So that's always a good one. How would we explain it to someone? Mm-hmm. How would we justify it? That's the word. I was trying to think of the word, Mel. I couldn't think of the word. How would we justify it? So essentially we'll know we've successfully navigated this jungle of decision-making when our decisions are consistent and can't be manipulated, right? So
yeah, we're solid on it.
Yeah, yeah. And I know I'm always saying that to my boys that, you know, they make a decision and say, well, you own it now. You've done your homework. You've, you know, gone with these tools. You've slept on it. You've you know, decided in advance. You've done the cost versus benefits. You've reframed it. You've looked at all the options. You've taken the emotion out of it. You know, all these tools we've been talking about. Now you own your decision and don't be manipulated out of it.
Yeah.
Don't be a leaf in the wind that just changes their decisions depending on, you know, who they're in the room
who
with.
Who they're talking to at the time.
Yeah.
Someone else is going to come in. Or you're seeking other people's, you've made your decision, but then you start seeking other people's input and you go, and then, hang on, that's swaying you.
That's a classic one actually, Mel. Mm. That's a really good point. Yeah. Once we've done all, you know, looked at the decision making from those seven or eight, sorry, perspectives that we mentioned, you know, the enemy, your gut, death, caution, courage, your parents, God, and your friends, then make your decision.
Yeah.
Make your decision and then own it.
Yes.
And don't be taking in more input from others after you've made your decision.
That's right. Well, this is late in the stage in the piece though, but we happened to be talking on the way here about some possible dental work.
Yes.
For myself and the large numbers that came up. That I've been quoted and then the processes and stages and things. So there's – and then – so that decision, I'm going through this whole process now, aren't I?
You absolutely
and,
you are.
Know, and I'm taking my time with the decision because we're talking big numbers. But then the ramifications, what I like that, what would happen if I did, what wouldn't happen if – would happen if I don't, what wouldn't.
Yeah.
So –
that's a great example, actually, Mel. And those.
We were chatting about the
It just dawned on you. Yeah, you're right. That's an excellent example of where you are going through these. Although I'm not sure you do the what would your enemy say about about your teeth? Probably knock them out or something, wouldn't he? Because you know, but yeah, it's about going through all these from these different perspectives. But I think you're absolutely right. Those Cartesian questions are perfect for you for making this decision because it looks at it from every perspective. And then you can make your decision in all kind of calmness, I guess, or peace, knowing that you have looked at everything from every perspective, and really, even if someone comes in afterwards and says, "Oh, have you thought about this?" Well, actually, yeah, I have.
Mm.
I've actually covered all my bases, essentially.
Yeah, that's right.
So, yeah, that's why, you know, as thick as this jungle is, decision making, and it really can sometimes seem overwhelming or thick, and you can't move forward. There are different perspectives, and then tools that you can take in with you,
that's right.
To help you make the decisions. And as say, whilst our decisions should certainly consider outside information and others' anecdotes, ultimately they should consistently align with our priorities and values. That's what it comes down to, doesn't it? And we all, gosh, every episode, doesn't it always come down back to values? We always mention this, don't we? Because it's just so, that's what life is about, aligning with our priorities, which are very individual.
Yeah, we've learned them and our along values. The way.
Yes.
We've learned them along the way and now we're putting them and identifying them.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. And this is where our decision making aligns with our values and priorities. And then we know that's how we know we've made the right decision.
I like that.
That's how we know. Fantastic, Mel. Okay, well, I've thrown my doona off. I don't know. I think I need the summer one.
You're ready for a challenge.
Yeah.
You're ready for that decision.
Bring it on. Ready for the summer, Duma. Thanks, you can have mine. But
don't weigh me down, baby.
Too much weighing down. Fantastico. Okay, well, that's a wrap from Mel and I. As always, you can find further information on this and other interesting topics on the Midlife Maps website. Thanks for listening. And as you continue to navigate midlife, remember Guns N' Roses' insightful words. Welcome to the jungle.